Which is a more likely reunion, Vinny? Maurizio Pochettino and Tottenham or Vinny Perth and Dundalk?
There was the setup. I see it.
OTB AM. Weekdays from 7:30 AM. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network with GetSetGo. Are you ready for quick start car insurance? Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.
Now, so something a little bit different to tell you about. There's a new podcast series kicking off here on Off the Ball. It's the Mike Quirk podcast. Best place to get it is on the Off the Ball app. It's free in your app store, the app that is. So search OTB Sports. You'll find it there. Houses all our content, including the Mike Quirk podcast, which kicked off today. And there'll be a new episode up every Tuesday. And conveniently enough, Mike Quirk is on the line. How you doing?
Good, how are you?
I'm very well. So this is pretty exciting. I know you've spoken to a whole bunch of interesting people, a real eclectic mix. How would you explain the podcast or sell the podcast, or what was the motivation behind it?
I suppose the motivation was simple. The motivation was as a fundraiser for Temple Street Children's Hospital. I had one lad in Temple Street about 10 years ago. I suppose the day after he was born, I had twins. And we were up in Temple Street for several weeks, and it looked very bleak for a spell. And then thankfully everything turned around and everything's great. And that's obviously down to the skill and expertise and unbelievable care that they provide to families all over Ireland, obviously every day of the week when somebody else leaves, somebody else is in there. And I hadn't really done anything. And I just thought with the timing that we had around the pandemic and, you know, everybody having a little bit of extra time, I thought it'd be a good way to see if I could link the two. So I wanted to, you know, I thought it was probably a novel way is to start off that podcast idea by tapping into maybe some of the context that I would have had in coaching and management and sport and different things, and see if we could just kind of mix the whole thing into to do something worthwhile, both for kids and coaches to benefit from, and then also on the other end to get people to donate a little bit of money to the fundraiser for Temple Street.
Good man. So a belated thank you.
Yeah, well, it's still going. It's still open. That's I think that's the beauty of it. Yeah, we're trying to keep pushing that throughout these episodes as well. So I think, like, hopefully this will help it reach a lot more ears. And as it's been going, the more people that listen, the more people that tend to donate. So it's for a very kind of benevolent cause, I suppose, really. And they're the ones that are benefiting most from it.
Good man. And if people want to make a donation, do you give out those details on the podcast? You do?
I do. I give out the details and they'll find it on my Twitter page at Mike Quirk. And it's a fundraising page that I've set up directly, and everything there that's raised obviously goes to Temple Street.
Good man. When did you say all this happened? Did you say 10 years ago?
Initially it was 10. Yeah, they're 10 since February. Yeah, scary thing. And I was just so you become a dad for the first time, obviously, and twins, which is crazy in itself. And they came several weeks early and was in the hospital all day. I remember it vividly like it was yesterday, and small, nice little pub down here in Tralee called Betty's. I eventually got there with a few of my good friends about maybe 10:30 at night. I'd put in the long stint and we had heard nothing all day. Everything was good. And suddenly my phone started ringing and back up to the hospital. And before I knew it, I was on my way to Temple Street the following day, following an ambulance, as my wife was in hospital in Tralee, you know, staying with Cameron, my other son, you know. And scary stuff, like, yeah, really, really scary stuff for anybody. And like, you have no idea. I know we're all conscious of Temple Street, y'all. Like, I've always been conscious of it. But we don't have any clue. Like, we're spending weeks above there in ICU, which is, like, you know, the sickest of the sick children in Ireland. And to see, you know, you talk about, like, people who are working, these nurses and doctors who are just, I mean, it's insane the workload that they have and the care that they give people and the kind of empathy that they show. And I know that's their job and it's a vocation and it's whatever, but I just, you know, it's frightening when you're in that situation and the care they show you, and then that they depend so much on fundraising efforts and people, you know, being so generous with their money, as we Irish people always tend to be, to these good causes. And so, yeah, look, anything that people can spare, it's obviously very appreciated and it's going to a very worthy cause.
Yeah, I had no idea. Gee, so that drive behind the ambulance with your wife behind in Tralee as you head for Dublin, what's your memory of that?
I had a good friend of mine, to be fair, came with me, took off work. Okay.
That is a good friend. That's not a drive you want to do on your own.
No. I remember the nurse, who was with the ambulance, who was dealing with him and bringing him into the ambulance. She just said, look, can I give you one piece of advice? Don't follow us. don't try and stay behind us, because if there's any kind of a slowdown at all, we're just going to turn on the lights and go by it. And obviously, if you see that, you might think that there's something going on. But look, just don't follow us. But sure, like every stupid father who's trying to, you know, like learn his way, I followed the ambulance as far as I could until we got to somewhere near Adair, and suddenly there's a traffic jam and these people are gone past everybody. And it's a frightening thing, man, when you go up and you see your kid inside with about, you know, 20 or 30 different wires and tubes coming out of him, and me not being somebody who's overly like comfortable in hospitals or needles or anything like that. So it's you know, it's crazy. And to think like how small he was at the time, and the operation that they had to do on his esophagus, like it doesn't bear thinking about the skill and the expertise that these people actually have on a human that's actually as small as they're dealing with. And, you know, look, again, I know other people, loads of people have stories, Joe, and like there were such sad cases up there that time, and families are trying to, in one sense, help each other out, and then in another sense you're trying to keep yourself to yourself, because while you might be after getting good news or bad news, somebody else is after hearing the opposite, and it's a very, very, it's a very tough place to be. And I just think, like, I some of the stuff then you'd see up there, Joe, the nurses having to like try and leave their shift to let the next shift of nurses park in the car space because they didn't have enough parking, and then they were trying to pay for parking outside, and, you know, some of the building was needed to be renovated because they didn't have the equipment and different things. And it's just, you know, like it's a sin in one sense that we as a country have to rely on the fundraising efforts of people to give them all the help that they need, because we should be, you know, they're the one crowd, and every people obviously in that kind of medical profession should not have to be looking for money from, you know, the generosity of others, you know?
No, they should be the best resourced of
anybody.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long did that whole saga go on for then? Was it weeks or days or?
Yeah, it was just a few weeks. Yeah. It was about, you know, 3 weeks later or so, we were heading back down, and the 3 weeks probably felt like about, you know, 6 months or 6 years, to be honest. And every day was a different kind of a story, and there was different bits and pieces, and everything had gone well, and we were told, yeah, there was no problem, everything was going to be great after the operation. And suddenly you get a call and you're told, yeah, he's not going to see out the next hour. And you know,
you got that call.
We were told, obviously, like, you know, while the operation was going on, look, you can't go in, you can't be there. There's no point waiting in the waiting room because it's going to go on for like 6-7 hours or whatever it was. So we were walking away downtown, myself and my friend John, and got a call from the surgeon to say, look, everything's after going great. No problems. Everything's perfect. He's going to be in recovery and you'll be able to see him in, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours or whatever. So we actually went into the Oval Bar down the end of O'Connell Street. And just ordered a drink, just sort of, you know, I don't think we were even drinking. It was just to kind of settle ourselves. And I'd say we hadn't ordered the drink, and my phone rang to say, no, you need to actually get here now. Something's gone wrong, and you know, unlikely to see out the next hour. So it was that kind of frantic. And then suddenly, you know, within that night, he got stronger, and the next day, and now he's running around the place kicking ball and breaking windows, and, you know, doesn't even recall any of this stuff happening, you know. And I suppose, again, it's just, it leaves you with that kind of thing, Joe. If there's anything at all you can do then to help out these people,
you know,
you're willing to ask people the favors and ask the people that I asked to go on the podcast and do this thing. And everybody, like when you hear Temple Street, everybody's more than willing to help out in any way they can, you know?
Yeah. God, no idea what happened. Yeah, wow.
No, it's bonkers.
One last one, without being too profound about the whole thing or having to find some kind of learning or meaning in the whole thing. Do you think the experience left a mark on you, left an impact on you, or did you quickly, as I suspect lots of us would do after saying, I'll never take things for granted again, did you quickly revert to taking things for granted again, or did it leave some kind of a mark on you?
I think when you're told like that, look, it's very unlikely that your son or any daughter or any child will see out the next hour, and if they do, it's unlikely they'll get through the night. Like it does leave a mark. Like it does, because you have that deeper kind of appreciation, I think, like of the fact that they're here now and you know are so full of joy and full of everything themselves, and it does really then as well, I think, just leave you with such an appreciation for the skill and the care and the help that you know, they show you in these places. And again, like, I know, like, you see people on the street and they may be banging a bucket and collecting money for Temple Street, and we're kind of going, listen, come on, lads, I, you know, people have lost their jobs, we don't have, like, and they rely on this kind of funding, like, which is so crazy themselves, and crumbling, and all these incredible, I'm sure there's people all over. I can remember a family, and I wouldn't go into the details, but like, I was doing my best at the time, Joe, to try and not engage with the other families, because I knew there was some tough stories up there. And when our story started to turn a little bit, it looked like we were going to be one of the good stories, like to get to leave the hospital again and with our child in a really healthy place. And there was other stories that were not going to be in that way. And I can remember my wife came up and like, so straight away, she wasn't there a day, and she had the story of this other family, and we shared their story. And suddenly, no, I was linked to these people because I was the one that was staying there all the time. And it's tough, especially then when you see these other people who don't get the kind of news that you're lucky enough to get. And yet the staff that are there just deal with everybody in a kind of a way that, you know, that you couldn't ask for anymore, really. And again, we were just really fortunate. And again, that was probably the main motivation behind all this, really, Joe. I hadn't done anything. My wife had done a mini marathon every year and raised a couple of, you know, that bit of money every year. So I just wanted to do something with that, you know, with that time to put it as best use as I could.
Okay, well, listen, good man. I'm so glad it all worked out. My God, you'd still be dealing with the fallout of that, I'd say, if things had gone another way, and you think of those other parents. So the Mike Quirk podcast, and the first episode has gone up today on the OTB Sports app. So you've got some brilliant names here. I'm flicking through some of the names. So Russ Bradbird is the first name who's on today. We'll come back to him in a second, but flicking through, you've got Patrick Harding, who is a performance coach in the world of Formula One. I don't know if you've been watching Drive to Survive, but suddenly we're all into our Formula One again. Yeah. You've got Ray Boyne as well. People will know him from the world of GA and analysis. Barry Solon over at Arsenal for many a year, the Mayo man. You have Anne Downey, needs no introduction. And then you've got some other interesting people whose names wouldn't jump off the page to me, but reading about them. So like an Alan Ringland, who's in the Munster Technological University, spent 14 years working as a psychologist for Paralympics Ireland. And he talks about things like deliberate play as opposed to deliberate practice and so on. You've got Joe O'Connor on strength and conditioning, and Nick Potter, high performance at Duke basketball. You've got Derek McGrath. We know him obviously from hurling, and on it goes. Bernard Jackman, I would think he'd be very interesting. Jason Sherlock. So a lot of really good names here. I mean, are you saying to them, guys, help me out here? How did you pick all these names?
It was random enough, really. There was a few of them that I thought I'd love to just pick their brains. I mean, selfishly, like, on top of it then as well, Joe, obviously you have the fundraiser side of it. And then I was saying, well, like, how could we actually do something that might kind of help impact coaches that will filter down and impact kids? Like, I heard your talk with the Taoiseach recently, and I thought it was brilliant the way, you know, the questions about the sport and how we can really impact kids in terms of PE and their time in sport. And I thought this was a kind of a similar theme, like that if you can help coaches to do, you know, what they do better. And I'm not talking about, you know, in terms of, it's not all high performance stuff. It's not anything about inter-county or elite sport. There's bits of that stuff there, of course, but it's all about kind of how can you take that information and impact if you're working with kids, if you're a parent working with your own children or whatever it is. And some of the stuff I thought, some of the nuggets that came out, like we're just fantastic. Like Russ is obviously, you know, this week and Russ would have been a guy who would have coached us in Tralee Tigers with the basketball. He would have coached in University of Texas El Paso with Lou Henson and Don Haskins. And Don Haskins, I don't know if you ever saw the movie Glory Road, but it's a movie about this white coach who goes into UTEP in Texas El Paso back when things were incredibly, you know, race divided and racist, I suppose to call it in a better way. And he won a national basketball championship with first time ever with five black players starting on the team. And he coached, like he coached with this guy years later, obviously, but he coached with him and some of the stuff that he has there. And I thought Jason was brilliant. And, you know, you mentioned Patrick Harding, like we were glued to that Drive to Survive program. And this guy features in the program, like he's in the program and he's obviously, he works with Michael Conlon as well. He's Michael Conlon's performance coach and, great guy, and there's loads of them. You know, David Power there from the golf club in Tralee, a guy that people wouldn't be familiar with, but obviously played collegiate golf over in the States and came home, and just talking about like coaching individuals in a game like golf, as opposed to the traditional team sports that we'd all kind of talk about. But it was great. And people were so giving of their time. Again, Joe, I suppose that, you know, the fact that it's towards generating money for Temple Street, and then also towards helping coaches to filter that information down to kids and ultimately keep people playing sport, keep people being physically active, and not have the kind of dropout numbers that we have in sports and across the board, and especially in girls. And I think if you can do that, then it would be a very worthwhile experience, you know?
And Mike, were there any nuggets that stayed with you, not to put you on the spot too much?
There was a lot, to be honest. I was writing notes every day, Joe. I was taking stuff down. I was, you know, I thought like Barry Solon in Arsenal, like was brilliant with some of the stuff that he came out with. I mean, like, this guy is working in professional sport, and you know, the same with Patrick Harding, Bernard Jackman. These guys are working with like top level, like international, you know, athletes, and they talk about just the basics and keeping things as simple as possible. Patrick talks a lot about the kind of the mental side of it, you know, and Alan Ringland does a huge amount of that as well with the Paralympic side of it, and then speaks about how, I suppose, all of us can have those little basic kind of mental little tricks and traits to help keep us focused on what we're trying to do and different things. There was just loads, Joe. I thought one of the best talks I had was with Joe O'Connor, you know. And Joe, obviously, people would know him from, you know, his physical training with Clare and with Limerick, and he's involved now with Equestrian Ireland and different things. And Joe put up a graph. I can't think of the who was the person that did the research, but it was about Mount Stupid. About these people, basically, maybe on social media or on somewhere else, who, you know, they do a weekend course and they're certified, and the difference between certified and qualified, and how that small little bit of information, and people really, you know, blast that out there and put it out there, and these are the people that occupy Mount Stupid. It's a very interesting kind of a chat about the prevalence of that, and how social media kind of gives people a loud hailer to use a small bit of information to propel themselves into a different kind of an atmosphere, I suppose. But a lot of really interesting stuff. Loads for coaches, parents, teachers, anybody that's got any kind of a passing interest in sport. I mean, Nick Potter, I don't know if you heard of Nick Potter. Nick Potter is director of high performance, like at Duke basketball, working with Coach K, like the winningest coach in collegiate basketball history in the States. And, you know, worked with your Zion Williamson, your Jason Tatum, your Kyrie Irving, all these guys. Works with worked with Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, who NFL fans would be familiar with, you know, and like gives all the details, the intricate details of how they run their practice. It's that one is probably a little bit more science based, but still, you know, hugely fascinating because of the people that he's speaking to. And if you're of any interest in American sports, he's a guy that you'd find very interesting. So there was loads, and I wouldn't like to be leaving out too many people, because I found all of them very interesting, and I got something out of every one of them, you know.
Okay, geez, sounds great. So, as I said, first one drops today. That's Russ Bradbird, coaching from Texas to Tralee. And then on we go with all these names every Tuesday in the OTB Sports app. So that's great. And all for a good cause as well, which is, you know, I guess the real motivation and an added bonus behind it. Before I let you go, so relegation playoff incoming against Down.
Yeah.
What's all this been like? Because it looks like it's just looking in from afar, and we're not living it obviously, but it seems like everyone's back training, and suddenly here are these games, and like you're two games in and suddenly you're staring down the barrel, and then third game goes by and oh my God, we could be relegated here. So it's not been ideal. It's been a strange time for you to dip your toe into inter-county management. How has it felt?
It's felt very rushed. Yeah, it has felt very rushed. Now, look, if we had three wins instead of three losses, I'd probably be telling you it felt lovely. But it has felt very rushed. Like, I mean, we had nine players unavailable for selection in our last game versus Kildare due to injury. You know, now all short term things, but when you've got such a compressed window, like nine injuries is significant.
And obviously. Is the injuries are because you went from doing nothing to suddenly back on kind of thing.
Yeah. And I mean, look, we've a guy there who's top of the tree in terms of the physical preparation. So we've we've done everything we possibly could in terms of managing load and different things. And still, fellas have broken down with different niggles and stuff. So it seems like it's kind of inevitable at this stage that you were going to get that. But outside of that, like the performances, we'll say that we've given just haven't been good enough to win us games to keep out of this situation. So for us going up to Down. No, it's strange that we have to go to Down, I suppose, in one sense that game wouldn't be in a neutral venue, given the fact that, you know, maybe they obviously were caught offside with training, but yet have that game at home, which is an interesting little side piece. But in truth, we probably don't have a big issue going up there because, you know what, it we know what we have to do. We have to perform ourselves. We have to get a win. So whether the game is on in Down or in somewhere else, it doesn't really matter. It's just trying to get a performance for us. And if we win, we've been in a great position to stay in Division 2 for another year. And if we don't, then we haven't been good enough to stay there.
Yeah, I heard Pádraig Joyce giving out about that as well. I do think, to be fair, that it's had no bearing them not having their home game on them getting a home game now. As in, even the game they played away from home, it was still chalked up as a home game. So they didn't benefit from the rule break. But look, I guess people would say, well, the punishment wasn't severe enough, maybe is the point as well. So I was having a look. 10 points against Cork, 12 against Clare, 1-8 against Kildare. So you're kind of pitching in somewhere between 10 and 12 points. And I heard you saying after the game at the weekend, you know, our target is 18, 19 points a game. Putting the ball over the bar, as much as this sport is going to change and evolve, there's a simple kind of end point, isn't there? And you got to put the ball over the bar. So break that down for me. What's not happening there? Or what's the root cause of that?
Yeah, look, I'm probably harping on about it even too much, to be honest. Yeah, right, because okay. The more you talk about it now at this stage, it's becoming a thing, you know. And like we've good forwards and we're getting good quality looks and eventually, like I'm a big believer, if you keep doing the right things in training and you keep doing the right things in the game, eventually, you know, these things will turn because fellas have the quality and that's not going to be a big issue. But there's other things that we're not doing well enough or that we haven't done well enough that we need to, you know, for like this game for us against Down, you know, while other teams obviously are looking at, you know, running the championship and different things. And obviously we'll concern ourselves with that after. This is our All-Ireland final in 2 weeks' time. And we have to, you know, that's going to be one aspect of it, putting the ball over the bar, but obviously doing a little bit better in terms of our defensive side of the game as well. But if you're not getting up to 18 points, Joe, in inter-county football, it's very hard to win games, and that's a big part of it. But you know, it's something that I'm confident enough that, you know, the fellas that we have and the way that we're working, eventually that'll turn around.
Kind of an interesting thing, this inter-county management, in that your instinct, I think, would always to be pretty open and pretty honest where you can. And then you suddenly realize, oh my God, if I'm mentioning the shooting all the time, it's going to become this big thing. I better rein it in a bit. So you're getting to grips with a lot of things at the moment, I would think. And how much you give to the media or what way you frame a game is part of the deal.
It is, Joe. Yeah. And you know what? Like, the whole kind of, you know, this whole secrecy and don't talk. Yeah. I know it's probably obvious that I'm not, you know, I've never stopped players doing an interview. I've never told fellas you can't talk to this guy. Like for me, like especially in that side of things, players have to be given an opportunity to show their personality, whether that's on the field or it's, you know, in print or through a media outlet. Like these fellas are mature, educated guys that know their own mind. And once they're not doing anything that's inappropriate, then fellas should be allowed to express themselves and let people know who they are outside of just being a footballer. And I think there's way too much made of the management stuff, to be honest. I think people just kind of, you know, make out that it's a tough gig, obviously, like, especially when you're losing games, it's a tough gig because everything closes in on top of you. But, you know, it's just those little side pieces that you're talking about. Like suddenly if we kick, you know, two games in a row where we have a lot of chances and we don't take them. And I bring that up and it's, you know, it's my responsibility, obviously, to talk about it. And then when I do, then it's an issue. And now everybody's listening to it and it becomes something that it's a focus of the players. And you don't want that, obviously. So I think we can just, you know, get back to focusing on doing as many good things as we can. And once we keep doing that, eventually good things will start to happen, you know.
Yeah. So it's this game against Down, which is huge. And then I think in the championship, it's Westmeath on July 4th. So at least a bit of space there to kind of find your bearings again, regardless of what happens against Down, which is good. There's been a lot of talk about, you know, free scoring and football's in a, you know, kind of evolving place. I expect things will tighten up again a little bit come championship time. Like, I don't think we've all gone, well, hey, let's just go nuts here. Or what's your read on where the game's at in that respect?
I think the game had started to evolve a couple of years ago, Joe. I think we'd seen kind of peak defensive football, and I think you had started to see the evolution of the game probably even before they brought in this offensive mark. You know, I think the offensive mark was like the whole idea, obviously, was behind it, was to try and promote kicking. And I think maybe, while I'm not a huge fan of it, I don't think it has a huge impact in the game. I think it helped in that regard at the start to promote kicking and to say, lads, there is a reward here if we start moving the ball a little bit quicker with our foot. But I think it had started a shift before that, you know, and I think now people are putting more emphasis, or as much emphasis now on, you know, like every team, no joy, I assume, has a target of 18 or 19 points like to win a game.
Yeah.
Whereas before, that was probably, you were saying, if you get to 15, if you get to 14 points here and you keep them to 1-8 or 1-9, now you've a better chance. Whereas now, realistically, like you look at all the scores, if you're not getting to that 18-point mark, you're going to struggle to be successful. And if we're getting, you know, 18, 17, if we're getting 35 points in a game of football, that's a great game. That's really entertaining. And it's, you know, that's what you want to see. While not neglecting the defensive side of it and the importance of that and your importance of structure and your individual stuff. But it's really, I like the way the game is going. I like the evolution of the game. I think it's good. I think it puts more emphasis on the skills of the game. It puts more emphasis on the scoring and all that side of it. And I think, look, that's more attractive for everybody to watch and to get involved with and to attract kids to play and everything, you know?
Yeah. I think the Dubs really put a nail in the coffin of defensive football. When was the final against Tyrone, where Tyrone tried to set up defensively a couple of years ago now? And the Dubs just looked at the picture and said, look, this doesn't spook anyone anymore. We've seen this. We've seen this before. We know how this is going to go. And it was a kind of inevitable procession. And I think that was almost the final moment for that approach, where anyone looking at it would say, this just is not going to, this has no chance anymore against a team like Dublin and probably Mayo as well. It's gone. It's over. It was impressive in its own way at the time, but it's not going to do it anymore.
No. And like, I suppose you're looking back at, you know, Tyrone in 2003 were probably, you know, the first one that really, you know, that really had that defensive side of the thing. And you've that image of them shocking Kerry, I suppose, with all those hits in around the Hogan stand. And but they could marry it then with the offensive stuff and still get your scores up. Whereas I suppose with a lot of teams, and it's only natural really, Joe, when you go down to the divisions, teams are looking at this and saying, well, look, like if we can keep you to, you know, 14 points, then we're giving ourselves a chance. Whereas if we try to play that open expansive game and now we're conceding 19, 20 points, then we maybe don't have the quality up front to get those scores. So it's a difficult spot for teams and for management teams and for players in those lower divisions, because they want to be competitive more than anything else. They're not worried about the quality of what you're looking at. They're worried about can we win games, and however that happens is the most effective way for them. But I think that the mind frame has shifted a little bit in terms of, well, we can do a better job here working on our skills. We can do, instead of spending, you know, a half an hour tackling, let's spend 10 minutes tackling and 20 minutes kicking. And I think that has started to change. And I think we've seen that for a couple of years now, but this so far, it seems like, you know, peak football at the moment, that everybody's moving the ball with their foot and kicking scores, and it's great to watch. And I do think we'll see a little tightening up of things in the next few weeks, when the kind of shadow boxing of, like, for the top teams, like, you know, sure, you can't even really win Division One the way it's gone, and Division Two the same. So it's, you know, we'll see certainly a slightly different approach, but I think the team has been set now in that, you know, we're looking to outscore teams and get a big score. And that's the way people want to see football played, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure. And a final one on all that, because it's hard to judge what we're seeing at the moment for so many reasons. In terms of, say, fitness markers and certain standards that you would hit when you're going full bore and at the peak of your powers, are you must still be a good bit off, or have lads been able to kind of keep themselves going?
Like we would have had big fitness improvements in the off season. You know, real guys made huge strides in the off season. I'd say a lot of teams were in a similar position, because fellas had very little else to do. You know, they were running or they were lifting and they were getting their bodies in as good a shape as they could possibly be. But it's just very, very different going from that into, you know, you've 3.5 weeks, you know, before your first competitive game. And then you go from that into a game 6 days later, and then you go from that into a game 7 days later. It's a very, very different thing. And I think fellas are, you know, nearly everybody's after picking up some injury that's knocked them out of training for a couple of nights. And it just takes a little bit of time. And there's no question, like, you'd love to have, if you had 6 weeks or something like that, to leave fellas, like, really reintegrate back into that kind of training and adjust their bodies to the kind of movements that's required in a game, as opposed to, you know, running in straight lines or whatever it is.
Yes.
But I don't think fitness is, I think teams' fitness is generally pretty good. It's just everything is so compact that, you know, it's becoming any injury is a week or 2 weeks and you're missing two games probably with it, you know?
Yeah, okay. Well, listen, best of luck against Down. And the Mike Quirk podcast, it's on the OTB Sports app. That's in your app store. It's free. You can download it there, get all our content. So the first one dropped today, and it sounds like there's some brilliant guests coming over the next couple of weeks. And obviously, for a very good cause as well. So jump on and make a donation if you can. That's the whole point of the thing as well. Mike, good man. Thanks, Emil.
No bother, Joe. Thanks.
The OTB Podcast Network with GetsetGo. Are you ready for Quick Start Car Insurance? Get a quote today at GetsetGo.ie.